Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez. I'm Amy Goodman with Nirmeet Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's topic will be the digital stakeout program at the Oregon Department of Justice and how it tracked Oregonians using the Black Lives Matter hashtag.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of MAMI, an art exhibit at Yale Union in Portland. MAMI is a group show that considers the mystery and chaos of motherhood, and in reaction to the sentimentality and laments the culturally constructed binary of, quote, family versus career, while acknowledging the persistence of that obstacle in the lives of artists. Again, that's MAMI, showing Thursday through Sunday, 3 to 6 p.m. until December 20th at Yale Union, located at 800 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. This month, the band will be El Cuadro Pepe y Rafael y Lily Last with cantores Elisa Rocha y Christy Jenny. Again, that's La Peña Flamenca de Portland, Saturday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater, located at 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for two positions. We are hiring a membership director. This is a part-time position, 32 hours per week, $15.11 per hour. We're also hiring a PM News and Public Affairs director. This is a salary full-time position, paying $31,400 a year. The full job descriptions and instructions for applying can be found on our website on the homepage on the right-hand side under News from the Boo. That's at kboo.fm. On the homepage, right-hand side, under News from the Boo. Applications are due Friday, November 20th at 5 p.m.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am your host, Joanne Hardesty. And if you've been paying attention, you know that the Oregon Department of Justice has been conducting a what appears to be an illegal surveillance program on Oregonians using the hashtag Black Lives Matters or F the Police. It came to my attention on November 10th. I was notified, actually on November 9th, that the Department of Justice was conducting a surveillance program and was asked to sign on to a letter to Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum to address some of the key issues. And so I think what I'd like to do is to start the program by reading a letter to you that we sent to Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum on November 10th, and then tell you what we've learned since we've sent this letter. And so I will start with, and by the way, the letter was authored by the president of the Urban League of Portland, Kenenje Harmon Johnson. It also was signed by AFL-CIO's Tom Chamberlain, APANO's Joseph Santos Lyons, Center for Intercultural Organizing, KC Jama, Eric Richardson with the NAACP Eugene Springfield chapter, David Rogers with the ACLU of Oregon, myself signing on as the NAACP Portland chapter, Ken Allen, Oregon AsCME, And we copied the governor, the secretary of state, the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industry, Speaker Tina Kotek, and Senate President Peter Courtney were all copied on the letter. So far, we've had a response from Governor Kate Brown and House Speaker Tina Kotek, who both are anxiously awaiting the results of the investigation into how this happened and why it happened and how to make sure that we don't have Department of Justice investigators breaking the law in Oregon. And so the letter goes, "We, the undersigned, have been notified that the Oregon Department of Justice has conducted digital surveillance on Oregonians because of their use of the Black Lives Matter hashtag on social media. As recounted by our colleague, Urban League of Portland President Nkenje Harmon Johnson and other sources, 2 weeks ago, her husband, the Director of Civil Rights for Oregon Department of Justice, Uris Johnson, was called to your office. At that meeting, it was revealed that the Oregon Department of Justice Criminal Justice Division had been using software to conduct threat assessments," end quote. "The division searched the Twitter feeds of Oregonians who have used the hashtag Black Lives Matters. We do not know how many Oregonians were investigated by the Department of Justice. We do know, however, that Director Johnson was one of them. Because he has posted tweets using that hashtag, he was identified under the Oregon Department of Justice threat assessment process. It is improper and potentially unlawful for the Oregon Department of Justice to conduct surveillance and investigation of an Oregonian merely for expressing a viewpoint or for being part of a social movement. We are concerned that such unwarranted investigations are racially motivated and create a chilling effect on social justice advocates, political activists, and others who wish to engage in discourse about the issues of our time. Furthermore, during a time when you, as Attorney General, are chairing the Law Enforcement Profiling Task Force mandated by House Bill 2002, we are particularly concerned the Oregon Department of Justice is conducting investigations such as this. Currently, we do not know all the facts and look forward to hearing from you. More information is needed about the scope, breadth, and purpose of the Department of Justice activities related to Black Lives Matter and other social justice movement. As a result, we call for an immediate halt to digital and other surveillance of Black Lives Matter related topics and those individuals using that hashtag. An independent audit conducted by an entity accepted by the undersigned to determine who at the Oregon Department of Justice created and authorized this threat assessment practice when it began, whether the investigations included email, browser history, phone, and other online and offline activity. What was the department's intentions and what has been done with that information? Said independent audit to review whether the Criminal Justice Division was properly supervised or trained to avoid racial bias. An apology and disclosure to all Oregonians ensnared in this surveillance. Direct contact from your office to each person who was surveilled, including providing those individuals with a copy of all of the information about them that was reviewed by the Department of Justice. A public meeting held by you, Attorney General Rosenblum, during this month to explain the information that's currently known about the use of this software to investigate Oregonians and your response to the situation. Your commitment to address digital surveillance as part of the Law Enforcement Profiling Task Force recommendations. Audit results to be shared with the public no later than December 31st, 2015. The letter concludes with, "It is startling that Oregon taxpayer dollars were spent in this way. We are accompanying this correspondence to members of the executive and legislative branch in hopes that they will commit to ensure an effective and transparent process going forward. We seek answers and accountability about the existence of a digital surveillance program in our Department of Justice that appears to target civil, racial, and human rights activities in Oregon. We request your immediate response and remediation. Sincerely. And so that was the letter that was sent to the Attorney General, Ellen Rosenblum. Her response so far, I mean, she responded immediately and said that when she became aware, and her letter actually is actually dated the exact same date. She says that when she became aware, she immediately upon learning of this incident, she called for an HR investigation, which let me say is not the same as a criminal investigation. It's more of an internal investigation. She's asked Carl Walker with Stoll Reeves to serve as that special assistant to the Attorney General. And again, my understanding is she's an employment lawyer and not a criminal or civil rights lawyer. She has placed one Criminal Justice Division employee on paid administrative leave while the investigation is underway, and says that she's prepared to take appropriate action in response to the investigation, including personnel actions. I will say that thanks to Willamette Week, we now know the name of the investigator who has been placed on leave. I will get you that name in just a moment. But if you'd like to weigh in on this very troubling finding, to find out that our Department of Justice is engaged in what appears to be unlawful activity based on Oregon law. Before I go to the phone lines, I want to quote you the statute in Oregon law that prohibits this type of activity by law enforcement. And so you will continue to hear about ORS 181.575, which basically states, no law enforcement agency may collect or maintain information about the political, religious, or social views, associations, or activities of any individual, group, association, organization, corporation, business, or partnership unless such information directly relates to an investigation of criminal activity and there are reasonable grounds to suspect the subject of the information is or may be involved in criminal conduct. So that is ORS 181.575. You can look it up yourself. We'll go to the phone lines. Good morning, Linda. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, good morning, Joanne. Thank you so much for doing the show on the subject.
You are
Joanne,
welcome.
I wanted to bring up when the Department of Justice here in Oregon helped the Homeland Security spy on and organize efforts to end Occupy. And we have proof of that in redacted emails that were directed to the Portland Fusion Center.
Oh.
And so this isn't new.
No, certainly not new.
They do this, and I'm glad to have it having such a big impact being brought out right now about specifically the most, you know, the front edge of activist movement right now. And I wanted to say, don't forget, so here's the thing, any information that went from any police agency or person here into the Fusion Center cannot be taken out. So our Oregon statute is violated continuously anytime anything goes in there. Oregon may take out its stuff about those people, may discollect, may purge every 2 years is what they told me. But that when I said that the same information went through the federal government to over hundreds of entities.
Across the country, right?
All across the country, all the way up to the top military organizations, DEA, you name it. Every law enforcement agency in every state that has a fusion center that is connected to Homeland Security and up. And so they can't really carry out Oregon law without not being part of the fusion center, without pulling out of that in the JTTF. So I'm sorry, I get really nervous when I talk about this. I'm finding myself out of breath. But it's so important, and it's not been realized, that Oregon law is continuously violated as long as anything goes in that fusion center. And it does regularly.
Well, so my understanding, based on having a conversation with a couple of lawyers after this initially broke, is that all it takes is a district attorney to want to press charges against the investigator who unlawfully conducted this surveillance program. But, and that's the big but, I don't know at the moment any DA that is actually willing to take on this issue.
Well, and even if you did convict and stop it here in Oregon, which I think is extremely important, you need to know that the information you're going to force them to show you and every individual who is surveilled,
yes,
is in the federal system and cannot be removed.
Well, but I think the more light we bring to this, I mean, I think that's...
I think it's wonderful. I think it's the best. I think it's the only way we could be a beacon for other states. I mean, I think what you're doing is hugely important. I just want it to be known that we can't stay part of the JTTF and the Fusion Center and carry out Oregon statutes.
Well, which was exactly right. Which was exactly why Mayor Potter would not allow us to rejoin the Joint Terrorism Task Force. So don't get me started, because
that's the point. Is we need to do everything we can here, but keep shedding a light on that Fusion Center, taking that information so that if they in the gentleman with the urban or no the gentleman that's married to the Urban League person.
Yes.
His, you know, if Yours. He is, for example, at an event in Washington, D.C. with his own personal car or not, they can tag him in a million different ways, and then they start looking him up as the threat assessment you said.
Exactly.
And that can happen to anyone who was ever input that system.
That is very true. Thank you so much.
Anyway, so thank you so much for doing what you're doing, but I just wanted to get that in there once again about how broad this system is and how much Oregon has capitulated to going along with Homeland Security and violating our own protections.
Well, that's a fact. I mean, when we get police chiefs that are very militarized and lie well, that's how we end up back in these kind of situations. And that was our last police chief, Mike Reese. Thank goodness that man is gone. I put the blame solely on him, because he was the one that was actually feeding that information during Occupy into those systems.
Yeah.
So
yes,
thank you
he was
so much.
Absolutely part of that.
Yes, he was. Ah, I'm so
thank
glad he's
you.
Gone. Now you got me out of breath. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Angela. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Hi, Angela. You're on the air.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, hi. I didn't know I was on the air. I'm really nervous about calling. It's my first time calling. But I listen to KBOO all the time. And
well, thank you for calling today.
And I'm a strong civil rights advocate. I'm Latina, and... okay, I have so many issues, I don't know where to start. I am trying to start a social media company,
mm-hmm.
and to find out that the DOJ is investigating people who use certain hashtags.
Yes.
That would really hurt people who work in social media or who do social media for business.
Yes.
It's not only hurting people who are activists, but people who work in business and who want to use technology to grow their business.
Right.
I mean, there's a big intercept between activism and business and technology, and the DOJ has, in my mind, obviously crossed that line. And no one is really bringing that point up, that the DOJ investigating activism could also be making people paranoid and making people not want to go online.
Right. Well, it's just spreading the fear, right? Just spreading the fear of the unknown. And especially if you could use such a innocuous tagline like Black Lives Matters, and all of a sudden that's seen as a threat, right? As a threat to law enforcement, quite frankly, because that's what they were looking for, was people who were going to be anti police or violent towards the police. And so I agree with you. As a young person starting a business in social media, it's like, well, what else are they tracking? And that's why we have this request in.
Well, I view it as more as they're violating rights against businesses for being, because it's possible to advertise for, like, to perhaps use the hashtag Black Lives Matter for, maybe a business might use it.
Exactly. And, exactly.
Any kind of minority owned business might use it, or just people who support minorities and own businesses might use that hashtag for some reason. The implication of what they're doing is really wide, and
I just
see it as affecting the business world a lot, and the online world a lot, and that hasn't really been brought up. And I think that
I think you're absolutely right. I think the fact that young people use Twitter, right, much more than my generation ever would. The fact that young people are using Twitter was the reason why they were targeting Twitter accounts, because that's how young people communicate a lot. And I think you're right. It's really troubling to think that how many people could have possibly been caught in this dragnet. And that's what we need to find out. How many people were caught? Because I'm old as compared to using Twitter tags, but I use Black Lives Matters a lot. And so, you know, if I do as a 50-something woman, Black woman, and you do as a, sounds like 20-something Latina woman?
A little bit older, but I'm not
going to
say
that. Okay, all right. So a 30-something Latino woman, right? It's absolutely true that just using the tagline should not be enough to get you the attention of the Department of Justice. Whether you're in business, whether you're doing it for fun, whether you're doing it to build a social movement, none of those reasons are reasons based on Oregon law for you to be tracked by the Department of Justice. So thank you.
And we don't necessarily know why they were using it. I mean, they could have been targeting minority-owned businesses. There's no proof of that yet, but that's a possibility. I mean, that's what comes to my mind.
Well, we actually have a history in Oregon of police targeting Black racial justice activism. When the AMA coalition started meeting and putting people on the street, we were targeted by the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division in Oregon. And so anytime a social justice or racial justice movement starts, you can be sure that you're being targeted. The question is, what information are they gathering? What are they doing with the information, and why? And is there a lawful reason for them to collect that information? And most of the time, it is not. So thank you very much for being a first-time caller. You have good information. I hope you will continue to call in, and you have a great day.
Thanks.
Thank you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, Joanne, I saw you on Channel 29 with the League of Women Voters.
Oh, yes.
And I want to thank you. I thank you for your program.
Thank you.
I like your program better than the other talk programs on cable. And I am 80, and I purposely don't use technology because I think it's been used to control and brainwash us. And I don't know if I said it. I'm 80, but, you know, a number shouldn't count. I should count because I'm a woman and low income. And thank you for listening, and thank you for your program.
You are very welcome, and you have a fabulous, fabulous day. And so, again, we've been talking about this digital stakeout program that has been run in the Department of Justice. The gentleman who is now on leave, last name is Williams. Why do I keep losing his first name? I will find his first name again. But his last name is Williams. I understand his background says that he is from Klamath Falls. He is a former police officer. What else can I tell you about Mr. Williams, other than the fact that he is now on leave, awaiting the outcome of the investigation? So why is this troubling? I think it's troubling because we know, especially in Portland. I mean, I remember when I moved to Portland in the early 90s, there was a big disclosure that Portland police had been tracking. They were keeping a so-called gang list at that time. Not much has changed. They were keeping a gang list at that time. But there was no criteria for how you got on the list or how you got off the list, except for the fact that Portland police said that you were involved in that activity. And so, of course, what's troubling about that is that the police were the ones that were actually deciding, based on their own perception, whether someone was a gang member or not. And that must be that is very troubling information. James Williams is the name of the investigator. He's 41 years old, he was the investigator that was placed on leave, but he was just an investigator. So for me, I have questions like, well, was this authorized by his supervisor? And who was the supervisor? And what did the supervisor direct him to do? Those are the kind of questions that I have about an investigator, because I believe it is rare for an investigator to, on their own, just decide that they were going to take on this issue. And so, again, what we know, and I want to say that Willamette Week did a really good job of laying out information about the Fusion Center, because I think there's a lot of misperceptions and a lot of people may not know that there is a state agency originally funded by the federal government, created after 9/11, as a data conduit to collect data on Oregonians and share it with law enforcement organizations, both locally and nationally. I don't know how many Oregonians are tracking that information, but when these kind of situations happen, it was just fortunate for us that one of the people who was ensnared in this digital stakeout was a high enough level state employee director that the Attorney General, Ellen Rosenbaum, had to actually call him in and have a conversation with him. What would have happened if that had been a secretary in the Department of Justice? Would she or he have gotten the same kind of sit down with the Attorney General? And would we even know? Because had a jurist not been caught up in this, we, the public, would have had no idea that Black Lives Matters and F the Police taglines were consent for the Department of Justice to track our Twitter activity and movements. You want to know what's coming up later today on Naboo? I can tell you. At 9 is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear interviews John Ferrer about his recent article, Splinterlands, The View from 2050. And we want to thank KBOO members for your generous support. If you haven't become a member, you can take advantage of our current matching gift for new members and members who are adding to their membership. Just go to kboo.fm/give to find out more. Thank you so much. Just do that quickly. And so we're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I heard about that a few days ago, and I was wondering, at first they tried to say that he was just testing the equipment, but has it been acknowledged now that that was actually an approved activity in the Justice Department?
So we have no confirmation that it was approved activity. We have is that there's an investigation currently taking place, and he's on paid administrative leave.
And they paid somebody, an outside investigator, to look into it, apparently.
Yes, and an employment lawyer has an $88,000 contract.
Yeah.
And the question to me is, why an employment lawyer? Why not a civil rights attorney? I think would be the most appropriate person to be investigating.
Right.
But
that's what it seems to me. And it reminds me of the 70s when they used to do that all the time.
Yes.
But what concerns me now is after what happened in Paris, I heard yesterday and day before, 2 days in a row now, I have listened to the media. And they keep talking about how young people, especially oppressed young people, are susceptible to becoming radicalized. And that word radicalized was thrown around I don't know how many times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just being used constantly, right. Constantly. And that concerns me because they're equating almost the fact that you may, if you stand up and speak about the oppression,
yes,
then you might be marked as someone who has the potential of becoming radicalized.
No question about that.
And that's very concerning to me.
Yep, yep. You're absolutely right. I'm hearing that too. I'm hearing that too. It's absolutely true. And so if you're young and angry, then you have the potential to be radicalized, yes.
Right, and now we're not speaking about, apparently somewhere back east, I don't even know where, what city it is, there was a clash with the police and young people protesting another unarmed man being killed, and I guess it got kind of serious last night, but they're not talking about it.
Huh. Well, I haven't heard a
brief little comment about it, and then they go back to talking about fighting terrorism. So it's alarming to me that critical thinking among the media is gone. So I'm at a loss for how. I'm just hoping that the higher ground and critically thinking minds can handle this, because it's alarming to me that they're using that in such a the word radicalized. You know, what does that mean? To me, that means if that's really the case and you really don't want young people to become radicalized, then maybe you better figure out what you're doing wrong and fix it. But it seems that the tendency is to just become more oppressive.
Right, right. Yeah, and blame the victims, right.
Right, and that's really sad.
Yes, it
but
is.
But anyway, you take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for what you do.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Bye. Another thing I want to share with you is that Governor Brown announced yesterday that she's going to do public records reform. Apparently, there is a task force that is set up to look at Oregon's public records, which is, the timing is absolutely perfect. My record, apparently there's a task force. She made this recommendation at the Joint Committee on Legislative Audits. They've had their first meeting. They have another meeting scheduled in the governor's office in Salem next month, with the plan of having public meetings around the state to get input about how to change it. You may not know that there's actually 700 exemptions, or is that right? No, I'm sorry, 400 exemptions right now to Oregon's public records law. And so one of the goals of the task force will be to reduce those 400 exemptions. And I hope they start with the bill that was passed last legislative session around body cams for police, because that bill is just the opposite of a good public records law. We're going to go back to the phone. Good morning, Juan. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
So my question is, the law that covers the spying on citizens of the state of Oregon,
right?
What's the penalty for that?
Well, that's a really good question.
It's not just losing your job, right?
Well, it should not. It should be a criminal offense, but
that's right.
But I don't know the answer to that. I think that is a good ACLU question. What is the penalty for breaking the law?
Here's the thing. If it's a civil offense, it's a wink. Just like when Goldman Sachs makes a Brazilian dollars cheating people out of their homes or whatever they do to cheat people, and then gets fined a fraction of that.
Exactly.
Okay. If it's not a criminal offense, they don't really mean it.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Oh, yes. All well, right. Somebody, I was having a conversation recently, you know, the difference between, you know, supposedly since corporations are people, except no corporation's ever gone to prison and served the prison term.
Right. And they don't get the death penalty.
And they don't get the death penalty. You got it.
Right.
Well,
right.
I mean, I think what we have to do is keep the pressure up. There were six organizations that signed on to the original letter, but I think that the Attorney General should be hearing from Oregonians around the state demanding answers, demanding to know if they're on the list. I mean, I think anybody who's ever used the Black Lives Matter or F the Police hashtag should be calling the Attorney General's office. I want to see my file. We should be shutting down her phone lines with people calling, demanding to see their own file. I want to see what the DOJ has on me. But that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I got time to do that.
Okay, very cool. Well, have a great day. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. The fact that this is not new, and we've heard this from several people who've called today, throughout the history of policing in Oregon, even before 9/11, we had police officers who went out of their way to do enhanced surveillance of people, especially people who are organizing around political beliefs or around racial justice issues. And I would love to go and check out the Fusion Center and find out just what kind of data collection is going on there. I knew that the data center was operational. I certainly knew that it had been funded by the federal government. In fact, $3.8 million the records show that the Oregon Fusion Center received from federal funding in 2014. Ironically, they went to the last legislative body seeking additional funding. And this is what they said was their claim, why they should get legislative money. They wanted to show the legislator their list of achievements. And so they say from July 2011 to June 2014, the Fusion Center had conducted 1,194 terrorism intakes, defined as a report of suspicious activity, created 1,497 intelligence profiles, and conducted 24 threat assessments. And so that's in the time period from July 2011 to June 2014. The article does not state how much money they were requesting from the legislative body last legislative session, but that should be easy to find online. Again, the number to call, 503-231-8187. And so what do you think we should be doing as we continue to flash the sunlight, the spotlight on this secret spying program that has been instituted by the State Department of Justice. It's ironic because I remember reading months ago that the federal Department of Justice was monitoring activities of Black Lives Matter activists, but they did not say that that surveillance was limited to just Twitter accounts. And my fear is that it's certainly not just limited to Twitter accounts, because when the attorney general showed her staff person the file on him, there were Twitter quotes, pictures, and articles, right? So I don't think that they limited their search to just Twitter files. I think, in fact, that they tried to collect as much information as possible, and that should be pretty disconcerting. I also want to give a shout out today, since I have a little bit more time and I don't have a caller on the line. This week, there were awards given to Portlanders. The Spirit of Portland Award was given out. What I want to highlight is this incredible group of folks. There was a coalition that was awarded a Spirit of Portland Award, and it is the Cully community that decided that they were not going to accept their award. And actually, it was called the Anti-Displacement PDX Coalition, was presented with the Spirit of Portland Award by Commissioner Steve Novak in recognition of their campaign to include anti-displacement and affordable housing measures in the city's 20-year comprehensive plan. But I love it. London Elliott, the coalition spokesperson, called on the city council to just say yes to the policies that are already included in the draft plan. Elliott said that the coalition's work is unfinished and it is up to the commissioners to make the award real. The group vowed to claim its award once the final comprehensive plan is passed with all the anti-displacement measures intact. The city council is supposed to vote on the comprehensive plan next week, but I just want to give a shout out to the Anti-Displacement PDX Coalition. It's impressive when you stand up to the city council and say, we're not taking our award yet. You actually fix the problem, then we'll come back and get our award. Well done. And a big shout out to London Elliott for being a spokesperson for that group. And so back to the phone line. Good morning, James. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I think what we should be doing in light of all this is we need to start making more insular communities, meaning that we need to start educating our own children. We need to start, we just need to create a climate of being self-sustainable in our communities. Because the one thing that I see that makes a lot of these a problem is that, you know, the history that is written down isn't written by those who have suffered for the most part.
That's right.
You know, so we see a lot of these things happening, you know, but it's like nobody has any, you know, nobody learns about this stuff till they're in college and actually have to pay for their education. You know, imagine what would happen if people knew about Huey P. Newton before they went to college,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a greater level.
Right.
Then we would be able to smell this BS from a mile away. There's no reason why they should be keeping tabs on anybody just for supporting a social movement, period. Mm.
Right.
They have no business. It's not their right. You know, people will argue and say, well, you know, it's just they're just trying to keep us safe. It's like, no, it's not about safety. You know, this Black Lives Matter movement has the potential, right along with Occupy, to create an intersectional, interracial, intergenerational movement.
Yes.
I mean, it is already, but they're trying to stamp it out before it gets big enough to do that. I mean, if anybody had heard about the Populist Party and how that ended, you know, you see a lot of the conflation.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's really what it comes down to for me. You know, we're learning the history in schools and the things that we're supposed to know. We're learning that as a conditioning, not necessarily that we're being educated on anything. And I think that's the biggest thing we need to focus on right now, is finding ways that, you know, we can start educating and lifting up our children.
You know, I think that there's a lot of value in what you say. When I talk to college students, I constantly remind them that the only thing that's ever changed this country has been when young people have said, enough, this is not okay, and have organized to make change happen. It doesn't happen with generations of 50-plus-year-old folks. It happens because the 20-somethings or younger. I remind folks that Aaron Dixon became co-founder and co-president of the Black Panther Party at 19 years old, right? It is young people who will lead the movement that's coming, which is where the fear comes in, I believe, with the Department of Justice, right? Because you can always scare older folks, right? You can scare them with, you know, they can't pay their mortgage, or they're concerned of what their faith-based leader thinks about them, or they're concerned about what the neighbors are going to say, right?
But
with young folks, you can't do that to them. And so because they just have a sense of justice. That's peer, right? And
exactly.
And folks my age tend to try to say, well, you have to be patient, you know, change takes time, and
due diligence.
But I'm actually out of my demographic group when I say I'm with the group that says, no, we need change today, and we're tired of waiting for change, and we need the right people in the right places to make that happen.
All of our laws are written, you know, all of our laws are written by cowards. People want to protect their
status quo.
To protect their own interests.
We got a lot of work to do. But see, I actually have a lot more optimism because I spend a lot of time with college age folks, and so I have a lot of optimism because of that. I mean, if you only read the newspapers, or if you only hung out with older folks, you would be really, really, really depressed about now.
Oh, no, totally. I totally agree. You know, it's a different perspective when you're talking to somebody who's in the thick of the work, as opposed to somebody who's just kind of, being an armchair philanthropist.
A philosophical conversation to putting your body and soul into it.
I think that you bring up a good point, too. You know, your body. I think that that's the biggest problem with a lot of folks is, you know, there's people who want change.
Right.
It's like nobody wants to put their themselves in the crossfire.
That's right. That's absolutely right. But you know, I also have to remember our history and remember that 8, 9, 10-year-olds were going to lunch counters and being spit on and taunted and abused, right? And so if 9, 10, 11-year-old kids could do that, if I'm not doing everything I can, then I'm part of the problem.
Oh, no, totally, totally. I mean, and really that just comes right back around to us teaching our kids, not leaving the education up to the system.
You know,
a lot of those, the black folks back in the day and the segregation, you know, I believe in a lot of ways were brought up a lot stronger because they didn't have anybody else to depend on at the time.
I think that there a lot is true about that, but also there were solid communities, right?
Solid communities.
There were places that you could go and you knew you were loved, right?
Even in those
horrid times.
Totally. I completely agree. I think that's another thing too, and you see that throughout history, where you know people have come in to colonize folks. I mean, that's how they divided so many Hawaiians against each other, was by tearing at the ohana and the community. That's how you end up with people like Ben Carson. Don Lemon.
Donald Trump. Have a great day. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
No problem.
You brought me some joy. Take care.
Take care.
503-231-8187. Hello, Michael. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Joy,
Michael.
I wanted to basically reflect back to a time, a period like the Black Panther Party. Now, when you talk about Black Lives Matter,
right?
Well, I see the Black Panther Party was a version of Black Lives Matter.
Oh, and, definitely. Definitely.
And I think that's probably one of the reasons they're probably under surveillance, because
yep.
they're lumping both of those type of movements as they lumping them together.
Yes.
And, you know, but the thing about it that gets me is that when every time I listen to people talk about change, the thing about it is you can't intellectualize change. And every time people come on KBOO or these talk stations, all I hear is people trying to bring about change through intellectuality, and it's not going to work. There's nothing intellectual about changing systems, man. You just have to go out there and basically do it. And power, you know, power do not succumb to anything but power. So you have to go out there and forcibly make things happen.
That's right.
And so, and I don't get that with people that on KBOO. I don't get that at all. I just see people, you know, you guys bring people on the air that selling books, want to make money. Man, how can, you know, everybody
well,
want to co-op?
Some, but most of the people that we bring on actually are people who are doing real things on the ground today. Now, whether they're things that we agree with or not, whether they're things that we would do, you know, I think a lot of the people we bring on are people who are actually on the ground doing things. At least I can say that for my show, and I can say it for many of the other talk shows. Sometimes I bring people on that are selling books. I bring Greg Palast on because he's always entertaining, and he's actually an investigative reporter, which is something we don't have in the U.S. anymore. So, you know, I will defend my guests as people who do things. Not all of them, but most of them are people who do things.
Well, you know, like I said, I don't have a whole lot to say today. I just see Black people focusing on things that I think is misdirected. I think we ought to be focusing on gentrification. We ought to be focused on reparation. You know, if this society, if this country is not going to pay us back for what we did through slavery and all of this, they're not going to do nothing else.
So let's just take your two issues. So gentrification has happened. And so what do you think Black people should be doing around a activity that has already removed them on time, because every 20 years the Black population is relocated in the city of Portland? And so what do you think the Black community should be doing about that?
Well, I think it has to start with the Black churches, because, like you said, historically that's the only institution.
Right.
And, you know, the Black churches never was dealing with current events. They were always back in the days when Jesus walked the earth, and that's where most Sundays, that's where their heads are. And there's nothing totally wrong with that, but they was never dealing with current events. If they had have been dealing with current events, gentrification probably would have never got off the ground. And so right now in Northeast Portland, all the developers are coming in there buying up all the land. They're splitting, they're dividing the lots in half. They used to be 50 by 100, now they're 50 by 50.
Oh, yeah,
that kind of stuff. Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that right now what they're after in Northeast Portland, the only Black things in Northeast Portland right now are churches. That's the only thing left in Northeast Portland that gentrification hasn't touched are the Black churches. And that's where they're going to go next.
I was just going to say, they're actually after them now. But again, I don't disagree with you that there's a role to play Even today, even after all the displacement happened on the timeline that it was supposed to happen on, there's certainly a lot of work to be done. And I do know that there are people and organizations, Black-led, that are at the table around this new money for affordable housing, around trying anti-displacement. You may have just heard me talk about a coalition that's made up primarily of community organizations of color. So there's work happening, but it won't be fixed today. But thank you. I appreciate your call. Have a great day. And I wanted to actually remind folks, you know, we did have gun control in this country once, and that was right after the Black Panther Party was formed. You may remember they used to walk down the street with their long rifles because at the time it was legal to walk down the street with long rifles. But lo and behold, quickly, legislation was passed to make that illegal. And then fast forward to today, the day of the Tea Party, and guess what? As long as you're not Black, you can walk around with a firearm, AK-47. You can walk around with firearms on your side. But if you're a Tea Party person and you're Black, if anybody gets arrested, you will be the one. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Ted. Good morning. We're down to just a couple of minutes. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello. I just have a short thing. You mentioned the comp plan earlier.
Yes.
And I want to say that today at 3 o'clock, the city council is holding hearings about the comp plan.
Ah.
And anyone who can come down, just having people there to show that the community is interested is important. But you can also sign up and give a 3-minute testimony if you like.
Okay.
So please come.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And if you can't make it, send emails to all the city council. Let them know that anti-displacement is a key component of the comp plan.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Don. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Don. I know you're at KBOO. And one of the things I wanted to say, the brother who was talking about action is all, you got to get action. Well, I love praxis. You know, theory without practice doesn't work. Yeah. On the other hand, Bobby Seale was one of the greatest political theorists I've ever run across.
Mm.
So when you talk about the Black Panther Party, they had an incredibly strong theory that they put into practice.
Yes.
So I just wanted to say, yeah, I don't want to be a, you know, the liberal outsider who's trying to get an analysis that doesn't have anything to do with what's on the ground. But if you're trying to do real revolution and real change, you got to know what you're doing.
Absolutely. And the thing about that was so wonderful with the Panther Party was that you were required to read, and you were required to participate in education forums. And that was a daily occurrence.
Yeah. And, you know, the other great thing, and this is something that you talked about the guns. I mean, I always want to say they're my Second Amendment heroes. But the other thing, that wasn't really what it was about. It was the breakfast program that scared the shit out. The Jesus out of people.
yes.
I mean, you know.
And right now in this
community,
we have the All Africans People's Revolutionary Party, who is actually recreated this breakfast program that they do at New Columbia, at least 2 or 3 days a week. They've modeled their actual activity after the Black Panthers as well, because they do the same education forums. They require their members to read very specific books so that they become knowledgeable about the issues that they want to impact. So thank you.
I appreciate that. And thanks so much for your program.
Thank you. I appreciate your call. I appreciate you being the last public voice today, because we're going to go out on a high note, reminding ourselves that it really takes the people to be engaged, committed to transparency. It takes the people to hold their government accountable. And we need answers from our attorney general. Ellen Rosenblum, this is not personal. This is about making sure that Oregonians are not being unconstitutionally tracked by their government for their political and social activism. That is not okay. That is not acceptable. Oregon law prohibits it. And where we find public bodies involved in this work, they should be held accountable. There should be a criminal investigation. There should be a civil rights investigation. And there should be components put in place to ensure that this does not happen to Oregonians again. Because it appears that every 5 years or so, somebody leaks something about surveillance activity that's taking place between law enforcement and law-abiding citizens. It's not okay. It never has been okay. And the people will hold you accountable. This has been Joanne Hardesty. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. As always, it's a pleasure to be here with you. I will not see you next week, so happy Thanksgiving. Same time, same place, same channel, 2 weeks from now.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning, it's KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Minute before 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning, we're about a half hour away from Per Fogring and Fight the Empire. Today, Per interviews John Pfeffer about his recent article, Splinterlands, The View from 2050. At 10 o'clock today, Air Cascadia will host, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. It'll be 10:15 for Flashpoints, and then at 11, Between the Covers with host David Naiman. Today, speaking with writer Valeria Luisella about her novel, The Story of My Teeth. That's all coming up this morning, right after we hear from Teresa Mitchell with Press Watch. It's the news you're not supposed to know. That's coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Circus Church, Sunday, November 22nd, 9 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland. There will be burlesque performers, circus artists, vocalists, audience games, confessions, and more. Again, that's Circus Church, Sunday.